Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impoga. This evening, we'll talk about internally displaced persons in Africa. And with us tonight, here in the studio, I have my colleague, John Tanza, host of VOA's South Sudan in Focus. John, welcome to the show once again.
It's my pleasure to be here.
You're welcome. And joining us from South Africa is regular panelist and friend of the show, Suleiman Mgula. He's an independent political analyst. He joins us by phone from Durban. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas and the listeners.
How is Durban?
Very fine.
I see. Well, gentlemen, once again, welcome to the show. And I just mentioned, our topic tonight is internally displaced persons. Last 2014, there saw an 11% increase in the number of people displaced within their own countries, a record-setting 38 million people were internally displaced worldwide, according to a report released Wednesday by the Norwegian Refugee Council's Internal Displacement Monitoring Center. Now, to put that in perspective, last year's shocking figure averages out to nearly 30,000 people forced from their homes every day by armed conflict or generalized violence. Now, the share of Africa in all this is about 11 million people. First of all, let's hear something from the Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council, Mr. Arne Egeland.
The country that had the highest number of new displacements last year was South Sudan. So this absolutely senseless war between the political elites of this young nation caused 1.3 million people to flee their homes last year in South Sudan. Then there was another million new people displaced by conflict in eastern Congo. And finally, nearly 1 million people were displaced last year in Nigeria, the majority of those by Boko Haram in the northeastern part of Nigeria.
Yeah, that's the Secretary General of the Norwegian Refugee Council. John, these are alarming figures.
Yeah, as you can see, South Sudan is topping up with 1.8 million people who are displaced from their homes. And basically, it's instability, civil strife, and if you like, for the case of South Sudan, it's the conflict that started in December 2013, and it's still going on. And as it keeps going on, people will look for a safer place where they can sleep without fearing, you know, where they can send their kids to school or where they can get basic services. So these are normally the causes of this displacement.
Suleiman, 11 million is more than the population of many African countries.
No doubt about it, Douglas. Actually, at the moment, we are a sick continent. Because when you look at the figures, 11 million, you find that it is scattered all over. The East Africa, the whole East Africa, the population is on the move. It has been on the move for the past 20 years. Uganda itself had 500,000 displaced people when the chairman of the Norwegian Refugee Council, Mr. Ian Egeland, was in charge of the United Nations refugee. He cried almost tears for that number of people to be in refugee camp for almost 20 years. And there was nothing. They did not have services. They did not have anything. So for 20 years, the East African region has been moved. People have been moving from their country. They are displaced within their country. Central African Republic is having a bigger number also, which England has not talked about. Burundi, Rwanda. There is continuous movement of people. Right now, as we are speaking, they are pouring within Burundi itself. It has started. Eastern DRC was the epicenter. Southern Kivu was the epicenter for a long time, almost the past 20 years. Then now when you go up in the north, you find the Lake Chad region is also pouring out as a result of Boko Haram. Then again in West Africa, we have had the effects of the Ebola That one is a natural consequence, but also people have been moving. So at the moment, the continent is just fragile. People are just, they have no rest whatsoever for the past 20 years. Mm-hmm. Remember, Ivory Coast also had the same problem. Mali had the same problem. So the whole continent is affected. As a result, you can say the African people have been condemned to suffering and poverty.
John, what's interesting about this report, it takes into account figures of 2014, but things don't seem to be improving. Take a case of the leading nation that has many displaced people, South Sudan. Things have not improved, as he refers there to the political elite fighting, struggling for power, but the grass, I mean, in quotes, which are the people, the numbers could have increased beyond that.
Yeah, because these are working figures, because, you know, some people are in remote parts of the country, and it's not easy to really take headcount of everybody who is fleeing from the conflict. Mm. But these are working figures that you can estimate. But the number could be higher than that because the conflict has been going on unabated.
I see. Yeah. And Suleiman, as we speak, news from Burundi just this today, some guy got burnt in the capital Bujumbura in Burundi.
Yeah.
And the protests are continuing. So far, the country has churned out almost close to 50,000 refugees to Tanzania, Rwanda, and DRC. This is an ongoing situation, and who knows how it will end up.
And is there anybody bothered? The government itself, which is supposed to cater for them, as you have said, is only concerned about the power struggle. In the meantime, the people are moving and the numbers are increasing, and they are not going to stop right now unless there is some action taken against the government. It's not going to stop. Above all, the way you have seen, in all these movement of people, the people concerned are not affected at all. Nobody has suggested, nobody has suggested to prosecute the people involved. The people who have caused the movement of people in Burundi. The President Nkurunziza is going scot-free, whereas people are dying, 10, 15, and then many of them are moving. So the number is going to increase. Central African Republic, the number of displaced people is still continuing. So the numbers will continue like that, Douglas. There seems to be no solution to this big problem.
But let's look at the causes, some of the causes. Most of these movements of these displaced people, internally displaced people, is a result of violence, political turmoil. Now, some of them are actually man-made. They have the elite manufacture these conflicts, like South Sudan.
Right,
it's
right.
A power struggle.
Yes.
In Burundi, it's somebody who wants to have an extended...
To stay forever.
Forever. Do they ever consider that people are suffering?
Well, if their immediate families are involved,
mm.
they might think otherwise. But you know what? The elite are detached from their own people
mm-hmm.
in Africa. These are people who are in limousine, who are escorted by military escort, mm. and they fly from one town to another. They don't travel by road.
Uh-huh.
They have the money to go for treatment in foreign countries. So they are not very close to the people on the ground. And if they are, they only come when they are seeking for votes.
Mm-hmm.
That's when they come and tell the people, yes, we will do this for you, we will do that for you. But once they are elected, they disappear. And so I would rightly say they are detached from the realities on the ground.
Do you agree, Suleiman?
They are not only detached, my brother. The other aspect is that the international community has taken their responsibility. You find the International Committee for Red Cross, they are taking over, they are helping these displaced people, they are getting funds from abroad, and then those people don't feel the pinch because they are NGOs who take over the role of government. So that taking over also the role of government encourages these leaders to continue. Apart from that, the international community closes its eyes on the atrocities which they are committing. Because right now, if the international community was serious, people like Nkurunziza are supposed to be prosecuted. People like Museveni, after 20 years of mistreating people in the country and failing to get a solution, were supposed to be prosecuted. Maybe if they were to try that way, there would be a stop. But without without any action taken on them, and with the international community taking the responsibility of what they should have, what should have been their own responsibility as people in government, then we leave the people to continue the way they want.
Yeah, despite us, John, the good faith efforts from the international community, the Red Cross, organizations like the Norwegian Refugee Council, these displaced people are suffering because they lack the basics. The children can't go to school in the camps. They lack enough inadequate health care, even not enough food and shelter for them.
That's true. That's the international community is trying its best. I would like to disagree with my brother Solomon here that the international community is allowing these people to do what they want to do. If the international community keeps off from helping the people who are affected by conflict in Africa, I think there will be a disaster. Because even without a disaster, most governments don't take care of their people. Forget about the conflicts. When there is no fighting, you still have remote areas where there are no schools, there are no roads, there is no electricity. The list is just endless. So if the international community folds their hands and say, this is an African problem, let them solve it, then we are going to face a big catastrophe.
I guess his point was they should also lean on them to make sure that these conditions that create this conflict and violence don't prevail.
But you see, the international system is political in nature. Some countries are in business with powerful countries in the international system. For instance, look at China. China is doing business all over the world, and they do not criticize governments that are not democratic. They do not criticize them, and if their votes at the United Nations, they veto some votes because of their economic interests. So if you look at the international system, these are human beings. They have their own interests. The international system is made up of human beings, and people who are there have vested interests.
In other words, the international community, in quotes, or not only international community, some of these elite would do fine with countries, even if those countries didn't have people, so long as those countries had resources.
Well, of course, yes. It's a question of your personal interest.
Let them not lean on these people, the way Douglas has said. Let them not put conditionalities on these people. Now, when people get fed up, they cross the borders. The bottom line is they have ended up in Europe. Now it is a crisis for Europe, whereas it would have been cheaper to seek good governance on the continent and retain these people within their own countries. Right now, Europe is faced with a crisis where it has to have an African continent migrating into its own continent.
I see. This is an ongoing issue, John. If for those who have witnessed or seen people who are internally displaced, it's really a sad situation.
It is not a very pleasant situation to be in a refugee camp or in a camp for displaced people, because you don't lead the life that you normally lead. You live in a very, very, very deplorable condition where there is no water. Sometimes you can stay for days without food. Mosquitoes are all over. You are bitten by mosquitoes. When you are sick, you could die from preventable diseases.
Yeah.
It's not a very pleasant situation.
Yeah, because Suleiman mentioned the internally displaced persons in Uganda in those several years. I happen to have visited those camps. The people even lose sense of dignity. They are crowded together, grandfather, father, children, and the whole thing is horrible. If you've been there, Suleiman, it's still something you wouldn't wish for your worst enemy.
That is why many people have characterized the question of Uganda as a genocide, because, number one, there were no basic services. There was no clean water, very limited. You would find one, full camp sharing one toilet, then diseases, no health services. So people were just abandoned to die slowly. That is why some people call it, as far as Uganda is concerned, that it was slow genocide by the current regime in government. Other things, no schools, no basic services. The way Douglas has put it, the social and cultural life is disrupted. People lose the sense of dignity, lose sense of direction. Number four, remember where they live. they lose their property and belongings.
Mm-hmm.
They lose the land which they were staying on. So they lose their actual life. And number four, there is no hope of returning. Once there is no hope of returning, which means if they are not educated, if they are not well-fed, which means you subject them to perpetual poverty. That is what has happened to Northern Uganda. Northern Uganda was totally destroyed. I don't know how many years it will take for that region to recover.
I see. Well, gentlemen, let's take a short break. We'll be back to continue our discussion of internally displaced people in Africa.
African music hits.
Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.
Indeed, something special. Well, welcome back. In case you're tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is internally displaced people in Africa. Our panelists are my colleague, John Tanza, host of VOA's South Sudan in Focus, and Suleiman Mugula, a South African-based independent political analyst, and I'm your host, Douglas Mpoga, here in Sudan in Washington. Despite the dire situation that these people face, and for some of you or some of our listeners who have been or have visited or have experienced these conditions, they are not the best, as I said. But something ought to be done, because surely these situations can be prevented. How does one take a country like a young country like South Sudan? What ought to happen? I mean, to stop people from being displaced.
Well,
there are no arrangements that where the people can be put in a situation where they have all the amenities of life.
What needs to be done is civic education.
Mm.
The people need to be educated on their rights. You see, politics has got its own advantages and disadvantages. Now, the advantage is that you, as a citizen, have your tool.
Mm.
You're voting.
Mm.
Your vote is your power.
Mm.
So do not vote just because everybody is voting. You vote the right people in the right place so that you can see change. Now,
doesn't that assume that you are voting in a free, fair, and credible election?
Of course, you have to create that environment. It's not easy. Freedom is not free. You cannot get a free space to exercise whatever you want to do just like that. It's not going to be given to you. But like I said, we need to invest a lot in civic education. We need to bring up credible civil society organizations that can hold the governments accountable. Civil society organizations that can go to the streets and, you know, tell the rulers that you have done wrong. You ought to have done this and that. And once people are sensitized, I think something will be done. Like, look at the example of Burkina Faso. People rose up, and there was no way for Blaise Compaoré to come back.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an example. And I think it's doable when people realize their rights and when they realize that enough is enough, you cannot take us for ride for quite a long time, and then there will be change.
I see. Suleiman, some people have heard and read these things, have mentioned the situation where it's like an egg and a chicken scenario. John here talks of educating people, empowering NGOs, civil society. I was reading the papers the other day. The Ugandan Minister of Justice was saying NGOs, civil society, don't have a say. They shouldn't be. Who are they to tell us what to do? So most of these countries actually have endeavored to cripple, to dismantle civil society organizations, all institutions. So that's the nature of the beast on the continent.
Yes, I mean, let me just come in here, Douglas.
Mm.
For instance, in South Sudan, during the 21 years of civil war, we had several civil society organizations that were really very vocal, talking about the war and how people were suffering.
Mm.
When the peace agreement was signed, most of these civil society, most of these individuals in these civil society groups became government officials.
Yes.
So and they're doing the opposite. They're doing the opposite, cracking down on the civil society that is existing in the country right now. So you're right that some governments can bring mechanism to shut down you know, alternative voices. Mm. But you know what? Freedom is not free. You know, the struggle continues. The people...
John and Douglas, you know, apart from South Africa and a few governments, most of our governments on the continent, especially those governments which have been in power for over 10 years, the same people for over 10 years, most of them have lost touch with the reality. We need to change the mindset, the political mindset of the leadership in these particular countries. For example, now, if you compare the elections now in Britain, the campaigns which have been going on, the attention is towards improving the people's welfare, people's conditions of living. Whereas in Africa, most of our leaders, the preoccupation is improving the condition of the people who take power. You find that, for example, in East Africa, when you look at our leaders, Museveni, Kagame, Kabila, Nkurunziza, none of them came to power when they are so poor. Poor, without land, without a house, without a bicycle. Now, the preoccupation became to make money, and they have not turned around. Up to today, it is still the individual and his family and friends who are making money, not caring about the other people. So, the, first of all, the political mindset has to return. We have to go back to the post-independence leadership, where we had people who looked at building schools, building hospitals, building roads, not amassing wealth. You find today a leader interested in driving so many cars and having so many buildings and a lot of money in his bank, whereas the majority of the people are suffering. Number two, we also, as John said, we need to concretize, but apart from the civil society, the most important sector there are the youth. They need to know that today belongs to them just as tomorrow belongs to them. They need to fight to change. We should praise the youth in Burundi who have decided not to run away, who have decided not to be displaced, but they have decided to go head-on with Nkurunziza and his government. I think if we get the youth on the continent to have that mindset that the country is theirs, the future is theirs, which is being disorganized by these few dictators, and they start fighting head-on, no matter whether they die, but they will get a better future the way we are in South Africa here.
It appears, gleaning from what Suleiman is just saying, John, greed of the political elite and corruption are big drivers of these conflicts.
Yeah, you can sum them up in bad governance. I would say it's bad governance. People who take advantage of the situation where nobody holds them accountable, and then they just mess up and go away with it. And in the process, if you want to correct them, that's when they say you are, in my country, they will call you, you're a rebel. Yeah. When you want to correct the system, they will say you're a rebel.
In other countries, they call you a terrorist.
Yeah. So it depends where you are. I mean, this is just an example, but the reality is that, yes, I agree with Solomon, the challenge is in the hands of the youth. And it all boils down to empowering the youth. Even our education system does not teach people about their rights.
Mm.
We are taught subjects and...
obvious reasons, yes. Because if they teach you that, then you'll challenge the powers that be.
Well, I wish we could have an educational system that will start sensitizing people about their rights right from grade one, so that when you grow up as someone who knows what is yours, not someone who is told, do this and do that. Because at the end of the day, some of us grew up knowing one president.
And you die
knowing that president.
Yes.
And some of us grew up buying one narrative from the government. Mm. The other narratives, they don't sound even nice to you because you will think, what is this guy saying? Mm. The government has said this, you know. So okay. These are some of the situations where we grew up in, and they are not leading us anywhere. They are leading us to conflicts, and we are becoming a disgrace.
I see.
One sad part before we leave Douglas, like in the case of northern Uganda, the people were displaced. They left their land. They could not live a sustainable life. They come back. They are poor. They are impoverished. The government and those who led to their displacement are still living a good life. They come back to them when they are so impoverished. some of them, the land is taken away. Those who manage to go back to their land, it is being bought by the very people who displaced them and made them impoverished. Now they are going to be displaced again by the very government, but indirectly because of poverty. It's a very sad situation which you have. It is the same situation which is going to happen in Darfur, the same situation in DRC in southern Kivu. Governments themselves, because of the greed, as you have said, they have no mercy and they have got no shame whatsoever.
I see. As we conclude, let's conclude, because one of you mentioned earlier on the role of the national community. These greedy and corrupt and violent leaders and political elite transact business with the international community, and some of them actually are propped up by the international community. What role do they have on making things better for the people on the continent?
Well, you see, the international community can do that much that they can do, but they cannot change. It's very difficult for the international community to go to a place like Burundi and say, Pierre Nkurunziza, step aside and let the people decide. It's very difficult because there are issues of sovereignty. Mm. Each country is sovereign in itself and you cannot impose on them. But the hope is in the people, that if people can wake up and realize that enough is enough, then you might get a change.
Now, Suleiman, don't the people need some support from somewhere else?
They do, Gladys. Look at the amount of money which the international community is spending on looking after the displaced people. The International Committee of Red Cross needs $120 million to only look at the displacement in the Lake Chad region. They are spending a lot of money. Number two, now, as I say, they have been caught up. The immigration now in Africa is becoming bigger and bigger. They are going to spend a lot of money. I feel it is cheaper if the international community should try to ensure that there is good governance on the continent. Number one, to begin with, all leaders who have stayed for more than 10 years, let them at least force them. Because if they will hold the aid, like the way they did to Rwanda, in DRC, within a month, they had sorted out the problem of M23.
I see.
If they withhold the aid to these dictators, the dictators will leave government, no matter whether they don't force them, but withholding. If they continue to finance them, if they continue to bankroll them, they will continue suppressing the people and the suffering will continue. And the continent, we shall have African gypsies on our own continent.
I see. So in the last 10 seconds... What are expectations for this? Are things going to improve, you think?
Well, I agree with Suleiman that, yes, the international community should not spend a lot of money on taking care of these people during the time of disaster, but they should invest in changing the system. But changing the system is very costly because some dictators are armed to their teeth.
And they are willing to go down with the country.
They have a political party that is also an army. So to deal with them, you need a little bit of a diplomacy and tact here to make sure that you don't add fuel to fire.
I see. Well, that's all the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, my colleague John Tanza, host of VOA South Sudan in Focus, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
My pleasure, Douglas.
You're welcome. Our producer, as usual, has been Jackson Mvunganyi. Our engineer tonight was Adrius Regis. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any part of this program, you can listen to it in its entirety. You just have to go to our main website at www.vonews.com, click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@vonews.com. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Mpoga.